Brian, you study how young people behave online. What can you tell us about their behaviour?
The research that I've been involved in for the last year or two shows some interesting patterns for Irish young people online, which in many respects is a European trend. Internet use is very much embedded in young people's lives. We know this. They use it in school. They use it to communicate. They use it to watch and access media. But there are differences across Europe. The big thing in Ireland, which really does stand out, is that most Irish kids are really entertainment focused. Entertainment and communication. That's their main thing. And unfortunately, too few of them go beyond that, go beyond these kind of day-to-day interacting with your friends and watching clips on YouTube. And we really would like to see a lot more of that happen. But it seems to me the case that well over half of young people don't actually go beyond that.
And how do you encourage movement in that direction then? Because obviously, if you see your child on the computer a lot, you think, well, at least they're acquiring some computer literacy. At least they're learning something.
I think more encouragement from, I suppose, all the stakeholders who are there to support children and young people. And firstly, at home. There's also an interesting finding in this research about parental attitudes. Parental attitudes in Ireland actually stand out in Europe as being quite restrictive, that there's a very cautious and a somewhat conservative approach, a scepticism about the value, perhaps, of the internet in some cases. You know, we're just guessing some of this. Certainly, it is the case that young people feel more constrained by their parents. There are a lot of rules about perhaps how much time and what kinds of activities. And this does compare a little unfavourably with other parts of Europe where parents seem to be more actively involved, take an active interest and to try and encourage and support broadening young people's online experiences.
Mixed messages there though for parents, because you are told to keep an eye and to acquaint yourself with what your children are consuming online. So you're saying we're holding them back by maybe being a little bit too intrusive?
There is a balance. And yes, indeed, there are certain mixed messages here. But I think it's in adopting a mature attitude. It is being vigilant towards the evident dangers and there are risks with the internet, which is largely unregulated. That's not to say that there isn't regulation. You know, there are controls and industry is largely very responsible in terms of trying to promote a better experience for young people. But it is necessary for adults and in schools. There are acceptable use policies. There are codes about what is permitted. And I think having an awareness of the potential, the opportunities, the benefits, and also the possible pitfalls. What can really help best in a home environment is for parents to find out more themselves, get more involved, do more themselves. If they feel that Facebook is somewhat alien to them, well, why not just get involved and see what it can potentially offer?
So you're saying that parents should actually themselves guide their children, say, are you looking at this or what about going that down that route?
Of course, the main issue here is really age, what is appropriate for the age of the child. And we have data from children of age 9 upwards, 9 to 16. But of course, people are going online much younger than that. And young kids are certainly getting involved or looking at different kinds of internet sites and services. So what works for different households and for different parents is part of a discussion that needs to happen there. And I think what is probably most important is some active engagement, having the discussion as opposed to, what is the right approach to adopt. For young kids, there's no doubt closer supervision is really required. There's the somewhat vexed question of children under the age of 13 having a social networking profile. On many services, they're not supposed to. They have to lie about their age to actually set up an account. So that's something that really needs very active discussion. There are services that are designed for younger children and that are perhaps more suited to their developmental needs, and can allow parents to provide an opportunity to guide through the interactional issues, the kind of questions around responsibility, around information sharing, around the meaning of friendship in an online context now, which is really quite different. And this is not necessarily going to come naturally to children and young people. They do need some assistance and guidance along the way.
That is an interesting one, isn't it? I think it was the Pope raised that issue recently regarding the distinction between online friends and real friends. Is that a real concern?
There's a blurring, and the terminology is simply used to connect people through different forms of social relationships. So I don't think we need to read too much into that. There is potential that the meanings of relationships can become quite blurred. I think, you know, the interactional aspects of it sometimes do need some careful management. But for the most part, when young people are adding friends to their profile or signing people up, often it is, you know, their own peer group. For the most part, that's what it is. When it goes beyond that, and I think that's where a little bit of, you know, careful, astute management is needed, just to know who is able to access their information, what is it that they're saying online, who are they interacting with. This is where perhaps, you know, some care is required. And again, depending on the age of the child.
One thing parents do worry about is online bullying. How prevalent is that?
In our findings, it wasn't quite as prevalent as we might have thought. It is certainly the risk that causes the most concern. There are often, you know, very, you know, serious cases. They're very much in the public profile with very serious and negative outcomes, including suicide. And clearly it is something that is of major concern, I think, to regulators, to the industry, to various different groups involved in promoting online child safety. From our experience, in fact, it was really quite small, just 4%. We found that nearly a quarter of young people had experienced some form of bullying, offline as well as online. And this is in the schoolyard, this is among their pals, among their friends, which sometimes migrates into an online occurrence. But the number which was, you know, actually directly what we would call cyberbullying, in fact, was quite small in the Irish case of about 4%, and it was higher in other parts of Europe. So perhaps this is something that schools have got on top of. They've been very concerned about it. And, you know, there have been a number of education and awareness raising programs. So perhaps that is having an effect.
So what are the risks then that parents need to worry about?
There are lots of risks out there in terms of access to content that is unsuitable for children at a certain stage of their development. And the internet is not regulated like television. There's no real age rating available. So it's all there. You know, parents will legitimately have some concerns around that. There are communication and contact kinds of risks, who children or young people or teenagers may come into contact with. Again, some vigilance is certainly required around this. The kinds of risks that we found bothered young people most, though often actually came from their friends and from their peer culture. And this had to do with having people hack into their account. It was something that young people spoke about a lot, but that's often because they shared their password with somebody or they didn't have appropriate kinds of protection on their own accounts. That was a concern, and potentially fraud or nasty comments posted to their sites. These are the kinds of things that I think with a little bit of due diligence can be managed a little bit better.
Explain the term digital natives. What do you mean when you use that?
Digital natives is the generation supposedly that has grown up with digital technology, and the idea that it is technology that comes naturally to them, and that the way they learn and interact with the world is all through a digital lens. So from children born from 1995 onwards, they're in the age of the internet and they're living in an online world, compared to a generation prior to that who has to grow into it or has adopted it at a certain stage. It's certainly a phraseology that is why widely used, and it has some substance. It has wide currency in education thinking, that we need to rethink our education models because of the prevalence of digital technologies and the fact that we live in a very converged kind of environment. That is the case. But more and more, I think there is a recognition that we can overstate these differences, and it doesn't necessarily hold hard and fast in that way. And there are digital natives and there are digital immigrants in different ways and at different times. There are degrees of being complete digital native, but we must remember that there are continuing divides and there are continuing patterns of exclusion. Not everyone has the kind of access that we might enjoy in this country, and not everyone in this country indeed has the kind of access and has the benefits of online digital living available to them in quite the same way.
But amongst the young people, is it safe to assume a minimum level of digital literacy, or is there such a thing?
We found that young people do more or less sit on the European average in terms of digital skills. Now, we don't have a very complete measure of digital skills in our survey, EU Kids Online, and it is something that we're looking at further. Indeed, there's a lot of attention now in terms of trying to assess and understand what digital literacy is and how it can be best measured. From the information that we've got, we can assume certainly that most young people people do have a reasonable level of skill. And there's some areas, again, where there's been some concerted action and it has actually helped. For example, the whole area of social networking, which, you know, has been very popular in Ireland from the get-go. And, you know, Irish kids took to social networking sites with great enthusiasm. But it really did need some education and some targeted programs in terms of how young people can best use these and can properly protect their own personal identities and, I suppose, emerging codes of conduct and interaction online. That is in evidence. I think, you know, Irish kids' skills around managing their profiles are better than the European average, which is really quite good.
Well, is that one of your figures, the 25% who didn't know how to use privacy settings?
Yes, but that is in itself something of an achievement. The concern is with younger kids who really don't understand this, and they have our sympathies because sometimes privacy settings can be quite complex, and really it's up to companies to make them much more transparent and particularly age appropriate for kids who will be using them and using that version of them for that age group. But in other parts of Europe and other parts of this European survey, we found far greater numbers who really threw caution to the wind when it came to privacy settings. And so the number who do appropriately manage their privacy settings, their profile is private for the most part, it's open or accessible to their friends only, and they're able to control who is able to see which part of information that they put online. There's better awareness of that here. And I think that is the result of some good work in schools and by the National Parents Council. The NCTE and WebWise programme have all been involved in this.
Are young people moving away from the way they consume traditional media, from the consumption of traditional media? I mean, I would see my kids at home watching telly while maybe being on Twitter at the same time. I just wonder about the impact of that on even concentration levels.
Yeah, certainly multitasking is very much in evidence, and we can see this in some of the figures in terms of the popularity of YouTube in itself. And YouTube is just, you know, partly indicative of being able to access online content in a non-linear way. It's easier to find a clip online than it is sometimes to watch it on television. And at the same time, you can be doing other things, you can be communicating and doing all of that. So yes, I think that is very much there. And, you know, we're seeing within this, you know, the emergence of a very new kind of convergence consumption culture. It does all happen together, and young people are, you know, used to being able to access what they want, when they want it, and on their terms, and increasingly on a mobile device. So it all makes it very, very easy. But the other side of that is that there's certainly concerns about attention spans. There's been recent comment in terms of, you know, is Facebook the greatest enemy of study and homework habits and so on? And indeed, we did find that young people in Ireland were quite concerned themselves that they may be excessively spending time online or using their Facebook profile or whatnot. So that is there. And it is indicative of perhaps a need for something of a more mature attitude and a greater discipline in terms of how to make the best use of technology, which is all around us, very, very powerful, but, you know, something that does need to be carefully managed to live a full and rewarding digital life.
And I wanted to ask you about the BAI draft advertising code for children's advertising. Is that crucial, do you think, to have some sort of code directed at specifically at children's programming?
I think it is. And I think it's interesting to note that the draft code does take quite a particular approach towards regulation of children's audiovisual space. And we have to think about television, you know, is still very much an important part of young people's, young children's media routines and media habits. It is there, it is important, it is influential. The need to be able to properly manage that and to protect children's interests in it, what is in the best interests of young people.
They're often simultaneously consuming media from different forms.
That is true. And these are some of the anomalies of the environment and the media ecology that we now have, that comes from all directions, from different jurisdictions, from different devices and technologies. And that is an issue that policymakers and regulators are continuing to grapple with. So the structure within Europe is that there is a graduated approach towards media regulation, with primary responsibility looking towards terrestrial broadcast content, which is very much the responsibility of national regulatory authorities, and to manage and respond to that according to the society's needs. Mm-hmm. It isn't possible to absolutely regulate across Europe, or indeed in terms of, you know, global content which is available online. But there has to be an approach, you know, which starts at that national level, and perhaps even dictating the ethos of community standards and, you know, an informed public debate about what we would want for children in an audiovisual context. I think that in due course does filter into public attitudes towards online content and raising awareness about the kinds of issues and the kinds of services. And, you know, that in itself, I think, will be helpful in terms of, again, raising the profile of this debate around food advertising and, you know, what may be potentially harmful for young people.